Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Well, it's been another crazy week, a tense week. I wrote a book about a year ago called The World Upside Down. And many of the things that happened this week that transpired in the last few days definitely establish the world is upside down. We're going to start with Washington tonight, our nation's capital. Just within the last hour, and this is breaking news, the Senate of the United States voted on the Keystone Pipeline. Finally, they could have voted on this any time in the last 6 years when either party controlled the Senate and either party controlled the House. No one wanted to vote on it. The president's been avoiding a vote, Democrat and Republican avoiding the issue. But all of a sudden, in the last days of this year, and power changes on the first of the year, it goes to a vote in the House, and within a week for a vote tonight in the United States Senate, where it was defeated. It was defeated by one vote. One more senator. They needed 60 votes. They got 59. It was 59-45 or 41, something like that. 59 votes, though. One more would have done it. Now, why did it come up now? Not because the Keystone Pipeline is a good thing, not because the Keystone Pipeline is a bad thing, but because Senator Landrieu, who is in a runoff for election to the United States Senate, she is from Louisiana, and that's where the gas line ends up, okay, down there in Louisiana. She wanted it for political expediency to help her keep her seat in the United States Senate. So everyone moved their asses to get the job done now in the closing 6 weeks of this legislative session. 6 years have expired. 6 years have passed. No one moved it. It'll come up again under the Republicans, and it'll pass. The president, though, is anticipated to veto it. Whether it's right or wrong, I'm not commenting on tonight. I'm just saying this is not the way to run a business. This is not the way to run a government, to wait to the last minute and then bring it up for a vote for no other reason other than political expediency. Which brings me now to immigration, another issue in our nation's capital. There's a war going on over immigration. We know this. And it's been a war for 6 years again, ever since Obama took office. We need to do something with immigration. Everyone knows it. Reagan had this problem. Clinton had this problem. And do you know how both of them dealt with it? They gave those that were here illegally amnesty. And they got rid of the problem. I don't know how we're going to get rid of the problem. We keep screwing around with it. But something's got to be done. Because now it's a question not so much of the amnesty from my perspective, but the issue becomes we're breaking up families. We're sending parents back home to Colombia, Ecuador, wherever, and we're leaving their 12- and 14-year-olds here to live with somebody else because the 12- and 14-year-olds are citizens. They were born there. Their parents weren't. And their parents and the children want the American way of life, so they're left here, the better way of life. This concerns me because besides all this with this immigration issue, nobody's done anything. They've talked about it and talked about it and talked about it. Now, Clinton's got his own thoughts of what he wants. Not Clinton, excuse me. Obama has his own thoughts as to what he wants to do. All of a sudden, in the last couple of months, he's going to move by executive order. He could have moved by executive order any time in the last 6 years. He, too, is one that's waiting till the last minute. So what do we got out there? We got the possibility of the president with an executive order. We've got the Republicans threatening to shut down the government again. I doubt they'll do it. It would be the most stupid thing in the world. It didn't work the last two times they tried it. And that issue comes up December 11th. We've got the issue of suing the president. They're going to add this to a lawsuit against the president that they're perpetrating. And now they've come up with a new way of handling this problem today to get back at what the president wants to do. It's called rescission. I'm not even going to get into an explanation of rescission. All I'm saying is this issue's been sitting on the burner for 6 years. Now all of a sudden it's coming to a head in the last minutes of this session because Obama's bringing it to a head. And I say both of them have done wrong. Obama should have brought it up earlier because he feels strongly about it. Are you aware that Obama, under his administration, 1,000 immigrants a day, 1,000 immigrants a day are returned to their countries? We kick them out. We expel them because they're here illegally. That is more than any other president in modern history has thrown out of this country. Obama's thrown more people out than any other president. Interesting, isn't it? No one talks about these things. Now I want to talk about a governor that I think's got his head up his ass, and he's going to have trouble because of it. I'm talking about Missouri Governor Jay Nixon. Excuse me. Yesterday, I think he did something that's extremely stupid. You know, we have a problem in Ferguson. The grand jury's supposed to report this week or next week. They should have reported when this incident occurred back in, when was it, July or August. But they haven't. And they only needed 2 or 3 days. The public prosecutor there, I think, is playing politics. I think the chief of police plays politics. And I think this governor plays politics. He has not come out, this Governor Nixon, with one intelligent proclamation or comment anytime he's been on TV. What did he say yesterday? Yesterday he said, I am declaring a state of emergency, not when the grand jury report comes out, but immediately today, because we want to be ready if something happens. In effect, we anticipate something's going to happen, that if there is not an indictment, the black community is going to go crazy, and I'm going to be prepared with the National Guard. He's ordered the National Guard already into Ferguson, Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri, and the surrounding towns, all right, in anticipation of unrest. Well, you know there's going to be unrest if there is no indictment, all right? But he's sending the tanks in, the soldiers in, the guns, the machine guns, all kinds of warfare to be set up on community streets in Ferguson and St. Louis and so forth. Now, if you're a citizen, you live in Ferguson, let's say, and you see the soldiers coming in, there are a lot of them coming in, they're in uniform, they're carrying guns, they're setting up tanks at this corner, machine gun at that corner. This adds fuel to the fire before anything even happens. It agitates the citizens of that community who are primarily black because they think they've been put upon in this whole thing, and so do I. I think they have been put upon no matter what the grand jury does. But in any event, I believe the governor was wrong in doing this, terribly wrong, because I think he is adding fuel to the fire again. He's making the black community think that a fix is in, and he knows what's going to happen with that grand jury indictment. It's going to be a no bill, and he's going to be ready to take down the black community before they get a chance to even get aggravated and break their first store window. Well, it isn't going to work, because these people, if it happens, are going to protest, and there's going to be damage. And I hate to say justifiably so. I hate to see fighting in the streets like this. This is not the America I know. This is not the America I grew up in, though it did happen occasionally in my lifetime. I think of Kent State and a few other places. It's wrong. And he's adding fuel to the fire. He commented that the FBI thought something should be done. He's trying to place the blame on them. I don't hear the FBI saying anything. And the other thing that's really strange here, he also announced that the St. Louis Sheriff's Department, the County Sheriff's Department, the St. Louis Police Department, in conjunction with the National Guard, would be controlling the streets of Ferguson with regard to anything that happens. The Ferguson Police Department is not going to be involved. They're staying home. No more the Ferguson cops on the street. They're going to have this neighboring police forces out there, so no one can blame Ferguson for being bigoted or anything else. which now brings me to another issue involving Ferguson, the Ku Klux Klan. Now, you know Michael Brown got shot. We're waiting again for the grand jury report. The Ku Klux Klan is not dead. It's been there since after the Civil War. It was back big time in the 50s and the 60s in this country, the 1950s and 1960s, when civil rights were big, when Martin Luther King was marching. There were so many hangings of blacks in the forests of the southern states. And this went on. And after the Civil Rights Bill, it sort of tempered. The Ku Klux Klan is an organization, you know, those guys in the white sheets and the white face coverings, it tempered down. But they're back. They've been back. They're quiet, but they're back. They're back. They're back. And they're alive in Ferguson, Missouri, okay, as well as other parts of the United States. Let's talk specifically about Ferguson. The Ku Klux Klan this week sent out a flyer. They distributed a flyer in the community, okay? And this is what the flyer said. You talk about instigating trouble. It promised to use, and I quote, lethal force against people protesting the murder of Michael Brown. The people protesting the murder of Michael Brown, the African-Americans protesting the murder of Michael Brown, quote, unquote. They also said, and I quote, "You have awakened the sleeping giant, the Ku Klux Klan. You have awakened the sleeping giant." They also said, and I quote, "The good people of St. Louis County will not tolerate your threats of violence against our police officers, their families, and our communities." And the Ku Klux Klan promises, and I quote, quote, "consequences and use of," again, and I quote, "lethal force against African-American protesters." Now, it also has come out that with regard to the Ferguson Police Department, two members are members of the Ku Klux Klan. One is a presently active police officer. The other are retired. They are members of the Ku Klux Klan. Whatever it's going to be, I don't care. But the Ku Klux Klan is getting involved in this thing in Ferguson. I think the shame of this all, again, is the prosecutor, the chief of police in Ferguson, the police department in Ferguson, and everything that was done at the beginning. This incident has not been handled correctly from day one. And if there is trouble, and it's anticipated there's going to be big-time trouble, it's deserved. And what comes from it, I don't know, because good generally doesn't come from violence, but there are occasions when it does. Think of the black protests in the United States in the 1960s. You know, I can remember Rochester, New York. I can remember New York City. I was the attorney for the police Conference of New York, Inc. I was in both of those cities when the black community went crazy and had the riots. You don't know what's going to happen, but the Ku Klux Klan is on their horse, and they're in the march, and they're going to be in the battle. Okay, now we're going to talk about the state of Illinois. I got a lot of good things to talk about tonight. They're common things that are happening every day. Let's talk about pension plans. Understand what I'm going to say. If you work for a private employer, you work for a corporation, you work for a law firm, whatever you work for, and they have a pension plan, the employer is obligated to make the contributions to the pension plan and to make them timely. The employer is obligated to make contributions to the pension plan and make them timely. Additionally, if the employer is short of cash for some reason and he needs money, and he doesn't want to go to the bank or can't go to the bank, he's not permitted. The employer is not permitted to dip into the pension fund account and take monies out for his own use. In other words, loan money to the corporation. If you don't deposit the money on time, if you take the money out, okay, and use it for corporate purposes or personal purposes, you're going to get arrested. You're going to be indicted. You're going to be arrested. You're going to be tried, and you are going to go to jail. This has been happening in the last 10 years, especially the last five, big time in the United States because companies got tight and they dipped into the pension fund, which is illegal and improper. Now we come to a public pension fund, not a private one that a corporation has, and I'm talking about the state of Illinois pension fund. They've been dipping in that pension fund. I'm laughing as I'm saying this. I don't know if the law says they can do it. I suspect they're not supposed to do it, but nobody calls them on it. In any event, the Illinois pension fund, this is the land of Lincoln, remember, the home state of Obama, they got a big problem. The pension fund is light, $111 billion. You heard me. They either are short contributions and or have taken out enough money, so combined, they owe. The state of Illinois owns their public employee pension fund, $111 billion. A lot of money. This means the Illinois politicians, our government, their governmental figures, have looted and mismanaged the pension funds. And it's been done for decades in Illinois because it takes forever to reach $111 billion. Now, numbers talk. Let me show you how the numbers work on this thing. For every dollar that should be in the pension fund today in Illinois, there's only 39 cents. For every dollar it should be, there's only 39 cents. 61 cents is missing. If the state of Illinois did not pay any employees, I'm talking salaries for 3 years, did not pay any police forces, did not contribute money that they normally do to run the government of the state of Illinois. They use their tax dollars and their revenue for nothing else but paying back the pension fund, the $111 billion. It would take 3 years to pay it back just to make it even. That's how bad it is over there. And they're getting away with it. And this has happened in many states, though. They're getting away with it, and it's wrong. You can't, you're a public employee. You bust your ass for 20, 30 years. You think you're going to retire and you're going to have X number of dollars. Well, at some point, it reaches a point where there ain't X number of dollars. If too many people decide to retire at one time, the state of Illinois can't meet its pension obligation. And then what happens to these people that work their asses off their whole life expecting to retire on this pension? That's what's happening in Illinois. Now I want to talk about our president for a moment, President Obama, who I voted for twice, who I love, but I think he's turned into a major screw-up. I think he probably was, and I didn't see it. I am not pleased with how he's conducting the affairs of our government in recent, the last 2 years especially. I'm going to talk about immigration again and Obama. He has changed his tune, which is okay. Politicians will say one thing now, and 10 years later they say something diametrically opposed. That's being a politician. And even people, ordinary people in life, will think one way, and several years later they have a change of heart. They've learned something that makes them change their mind. Here is what Obama has done with regard to immigration. And I just want to share with you how he stood when he stood. You recall he wrote a book, The Audacity of Hope. I read it. Many of you have. It was a bestseller. It was published in 2006, 2 years before he was elected president. In that book, he said that illegal immigrants, hurt the wages of blue-collar Americans. That's right, because when they come in here, they work for cheaper dollars, which means that someone should be getting a better hourly wage and would normally get it if these cheapies weren't here, the illegal immigrants, is not going to have a job. And he said, again, illegal immigrants hurt the wages of blue-collar Americans. Not today. He's changed his mind. And everyone has a right to change their mind. I think politicians do it for political expediency. They say they've grown, they've matured, they thought about the problem. Anyhow, today he's saying he's seen the light and he thinks something has to be done with the immigration issue, and we've got to help these people who are here illegally and not just throw them out. And no one in the press asks him, why did you say it this way then? And you've changed your mind now. Let him at least have the opportunity to say, I've grown and matured mentally on the issue. But he's turned around completely. Now he likes illegal immigrants. He wants them here. Sure, because the Latinos are big voting bloc. And then in the next presidential election, they're going to be a fantastic voting bloc in this country. So that's what's going on there. And now we're going to talk about genetically genetically modified organisms. Oh, my God. You are not going to believe what I am going to share with you now. The United States Department of Agriculture. Let me start this way. I believe that many civil servants working for the government and state agencies, the bureaucrats, the middle management people, they favor they favor corporate America. They favor those big companies they have to deal with. Look at the banks. The regulators weren't paying attention to the banks, or this recession we've been going through would never have occurred. And they do this because they know someday they're going to retire from the state. They want that big job that's going to pay them six-figure money when they get out. So what do? They take care of corporate America while they are a bureaucrat working for the state, so they get that big paycheck later on. Now, here's what's happening. The Department of Agriculture, the United States Department of Agriculture, recently said, we approve genetically modified potatoes for planting in the United States. In other words, genetically modified seeds specifically to raise potatoes are now will be permitted to be grown in the United States. They can be planted on U.S. soil. And why can this be done? It can be done for three reasons. One, the Department of Agriculture says they will brown slower. Let me tell you something. The next time you go to the supermarket, I want you to buy a potato. I want you to put it in your refrigerator. I want you to leave it in your refrigerator for 6 months. Don't touch it. When you take that potato out, it will not be any browner. It will not be any softer. It will not be bruised, because the second reason is they say it will not only will they brown slower, they'll bruise less easily. It'll be firm. And when you cook it and eat it, you will never know that potato's been sitting for 6 months, okay, in the refrigerator. And I'm going to tell you something else. I think in some fashion we're already getting genetically, modified potatoes in this country. They're not grown here, though. You know, like companies like Monsanto, they got farms all over the world, and they've got factories all over the world. I believe we have to be importing potatoes because these potatoes last too long. It's impossible. I read somewhere recently that the potatoes you and I buy in the supermarket are already a year old before we buy them. That's how good this stuff is in these seeds. They look brand new. Okay, and the third reason they're saying the Department of Agriculture they're doing this, because the potatoes will contain less carcinogens when fried at high temperatures. They were thinking probably McDonald's, Wendy's. They take the French fries, they cook them in that hot oil. We all know when you cook on a high flame, they tell us to watch out on our cookout grills with our steaks. You burn them, you get carcinogens from the flame and the burning process. They say, well, there'll be less carcinogens, which now brings something to light that I find amusing. McDonald's announced this week that they're not going to use GMO potatoes. You have to compliment McDonald's for taking this stand. And they use a lot of potatoes. They use 3.4 billion pounds of potatoes a year. You heard me, 3.4 billion pounds of potatoes a year. For whatever reason, they're not going to use them, probably because it's not a popular thing to use something that's genetically modified. And I find this amusing, too. I compliment McDonald's, but I got to knock them. They got all this other crap in what they're serving us and selling us. For example, I talked about this several months ago on this show. 30% of what you eat in a McDonald's hamburger is wood. When the price of beef started going up about a year ago, McDonald's could not charge more for their hamburger because people wouldn't buy them. So what they did was, to make the hamburger still look as big as it was, they only used 70% of the meat they used to use when the price was reasonable, and they add to that 30% wood. It's called cellulose. And it's okay, I guess, for you and me to eat it because the United States Department of Agriculture said so. But we're eating 30% wood in our meat if you eat hamburgers from McDonald's. This isn't Monsanto that's doing this, by the way, with the potatoes. It's a company called Simplot. That's one of the big genetically modified seed companies also, Simplot. The real culprit here, you know, I can't blame Monsanto anymore. I can't blame Simplot. It's the United States government because we permit these things to happen. You should take the time someday on the internet to look up Monsanto's law and see what the laws are in the United States that favor Monsanto and everything they're doing. You would be shocked. All right, let's move on here. We're going to go to Iran. We know women aren't respected in Iran. They're considered less than a man, considerably less. Women can't drive. They got to cover their faces and their bodies. They got all these rules going back to the year 650 when the Quran was written, somewhere around that time. Well, there is a British-Iranian woman. She had dual citizenship. She's Iranian, but she has dual citizenship, Britain and Iran. She wanted to go to a volleyball game. This is in June. Women are not permitted to go to volleyball games. Would you believe that in Iran? It's an all-male spectator sport. Why it isn't good for women, I don't know, but they can't go to volleyball games. Well, this woman's a bit of a feminist, and she said, I want to go to the volleyball game. And she persisted, and she was arrested. And she was charged with a crime. The crime was, and I quote, spreading propaganda against the ruling system. Spreading propaganda against the ruling system. She was found guilty, and she got a year in jail. Now, everybody got aroused. President Obama, Cameron in Great Britain, the president or prime minister of Canada, France, the whole world, even the Pope got involved. This is terrible, a year in jail just because she wanted to go see a volleyball game. So the powers to be in Iran said, okay, we'll listen to you. You're correct. We are going to withdraw the sentence of 1 year in jail. Instead, we are going to replace it with, she's going to get a public whipping. She's going to be tied to a pole in a public square, and she's going to get a certain number of lashes with a whip. Nice people. We don't think like them. I don't know how we can ever be friends with people like this, or they can be friends with us. We should just leave each other alone and ignore each other. I'm going to talk about a crazy governor again. We have some weak governors in this country. We have some strong ones. This guy is just like the governor of Missouri that I spoke about. This is Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe. 10 years ago, his son was convicted of marijuana with intent to deliver. He was convicted of selling marijuana, the governor's son, 10 years ago. He got 3 years probation, never did any jail time. His father was attorney general at the time. Now his father is governor. His father's time in office is over at the end of the year. He pardoned his son. He pardoned his son this past week, so his son now can have his civil rights back. He can vote, he can own a gun, and so forth. I think that's wrong. If you're going to do it for you, it's primary. We take care of our own blood. We take care of our own children. But he can't do it as a politician, as a governmental leader. If he's going to do it for one, he should have done it. He has to do it for everyone. And he isn't. He's only doing it for his son, and he's not concerned because he isn't going to run for office again. Not the right way of doing things. That's the show for this evening. As usual, I enjoy doing it. I'm glad you listen. I love doing this show. And I know many of you listen to it as when it's archived rather than tonight, or you pick it up on Facebook and YouTube over the course of the week. Tell your friends to listen to. The show is growing. People listening are getting bigger and bigger every week. I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. It was published about 11 months ago. Buy my book if you haven't. Read it. If you like the show, you'll like the book. If you don't like the show, don't buy the book. You will not like it. Thank you again for joining me tonight. I look forward to being with you again next week.